Today, you're joining us on our first episode of our podcast, From the Minds of Gradeless Students.
Today, we're joined by Mr. Height, and we're going to be diving deeper into his background as a gradeless teacher.
So this year was our first encounter with a new type of teaching where we didn't have any grades, and it was all a gradeless classroom. And the first one to introduce this to us was our teacher, Mr. Height.
So we have Mr. Height here to tell us about his history and his thoughts on gradelessness.
Thanks, Megan. Thanks, Evan. I've been teaching for 25 years. I just got my 25-year plaque this year. It's really nice, sitting on my chalkboard. But in those 25 years, I would have to say that one of the things that bugged me the most was grading. Of course, for 25 years, I've been an English teacher or a teacher who teaches a class sort of like English. And every time I would sit down to grade someone's writing, I would either have a rubric or there would be a checklist. And regardless of what I had and how clearly I thought it would explain things, it never really got to the clarity that explained this is why it's a 92 and this is why she got a 93. So I have had a fundamental discomfort with grades, especially as relates to writing, since probably I started teaching 25 years ago. So maybe one other thing to mention is that while the class is largely gradeless for the marking period, we do have to have a grade for you at the end of the marking period. So when we do that and you have to come to a conference or produce an artifact and justify your grade choice, you always have to put together that evidence for yourself, and hopefully in doing so you've looked at the feedback I've given you, and rather than just saying I'm choosing this one because it's an A and I'm not choosing that one because it's a C.
That's great. So we just had a few questions that maybe you could help our viewers understand the concept more. When was the first time that you started to think about grades and gradelessness as two separate things?
So April of 2017. I can almost put a specific date on it, April 8th of 2017, because I read an article by a man named Arthur Kiravalli. And Arthur is one of the founders of Teachers Going Gradeless, which is this amazing website which sort of pushed me in this direction. And Arthur is an AP literature teacher, I believe. Yeah, AP Lit or AP Language and Composition. And he is gradeless with an AP class. And I looked at that and I said, well, if he can do that in an AP class, and in reading what he wrote about and why he went gradeless, and sort of thinking about my own history as a teacher, I said, if he can do that, then I have to be able to do that. And so I did some more research. And all the research I found, there's nothing I could find that said that grades actually improve learning. And one of the biggest shocks to me when I moved to the high school from middle school, and I taught for 20 years at the middle school, one of the biggest shocks when I moved up here was just how overly important grades had become to students. Everything was done for a grade, and the grades had to get averaged out, and you had your GPA, and the GPA was crucial because the GPA meant I am going to get into this college or I am not going to get into that college. And the stress levels and the anxiety and everything I felt from the culture of high school didn't sit right with me. It didn't speak of learning. It spoke of point mongering and grade hoarding. So for me, learning is about making connections and celebrating the connections in the mind. And you can't put a point total on that. And I want to help create human beings who appreciate the fact that they have the ability to learn, and it is an innate ability. It's not driven by the pursuit of some external, extrinsic motivator called a grade.
So going back to your point about how you saw grades start to drive kids more, Have you seen that increase in the past few years, or has it always been like that since you began teaching?
Well, so when I began teaching, I was in middle school, and you guys probably don't remember middle school because, like, when you're going through middle school, you don't really remember it. But yeah. I've spent 20 years there. I don't know. Grades are that important to most middle school students, but once you hit ninth grade, because there's that jump to the high school, yep. all of a sudden it becomes this, it is the overarching narrative of high school. What is my grade? What is my grade point average? We rank kids by grades. We sort them by grades. The other things that we rank and sort in the world are cattle, and I don't think that human beings are cattle, right? That's only one of the other things that we rank and sort, but certainly it's a good analogy, yeah, I think.
It's very true.
So off of that, when you shifted from a traditional to a gradeless way of teaching, how did that affect your job?
Well, I didn't lose it, so I'm still here. So, did people question it? Well, so let me talk a little bit about why I decided to do that. So I decided to do it because I am motivated by philosophy. I spent 25 years as a debate coach, and the type of debate that I liked coaching the most was called Lincoln-Douglas debate, which is all about moral and political philosophy. And at the moral level, I like to think that I do things because those things promote the good. Whether the outcome is good or the method for achieving the outcome is good, sometimes those things shift for me. But I will say this, I've never been able to act in one way and the outcomes have to be something differently. So the biggest example and the most pertinent example here is this. If I know that grades are physically and mentally harming students, and if I know that they don't push forward learning, which is what my life has been about, I can't use them in the way I have been using them because philosophically it's not a good thing. So I have this, you know, philosophical cognitive dissonance that if my philosophy and my practice don't match, then one of those two things is going to move. And for me, it's always going to be my practice. So when I discovered this, I went into my principal, Mr. Stippa, and I said, Mr. Stippa, for next year, I want my student learning objective, which is the way that we as teachers are sort of evaluated each year. I said, I want my student learning objective to be gradelessness. I presented him with the evidence, and I said, I want to do this for all my classes in the school year 2017-2018. And he said, okay. So in the first marking period of 2017, it was amazing because I got to listen to students creating narratives about their grades and why they chose certain grades and why their performance justified a certain grade. And I would never get to hear that depth of understanding if all I was looking at was numbers on a page that had been tallied up by me or by somebody else. So how did it originally affect my job? I was floored by the stories of learning that I heard from students. After the first marking period last year, I hit some really big obstacles, and I realized that there was a whole lot more organization that I had to get down, and there was a whole lot more I still had to learn in order to continue this process. So after the second marking period in 2017-2018, things sort of fell apart, and I had to divert back to just scores in the grade book, and so it sort of devolved. But this year I've been able to, I think, much better keep things together for the entire four marking periods. It is not as easy as tallying numbers, but it is far more geared towards understanding learning than just giving out scores. So since I'm all about learning, how has it affected my job? I think I have learned more about my learners, and I think my learners are understanding what learning is for them better.
So you said that last year you had to switch after the first marking period back to regular grades almost.
Well, after the second marking
period. After the second marking period, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But how did you see the students' opinions and reactions towards the class kind of change through that?
So they realized that it had changed, and I readily admitted that I had encountered some problems and that I needed some time to think things through. But at the end of the year, I did give them a survey, and I asked them to sort of like give me some feedback on the entire grade list position and how they felt as they were going through it. And the majority, not the vast majority, but the majority of students in that first year felt that there was a really positive outcome to being able to talk about their grades and to being able to constantly get feedback and improve their grades. So that, or I shouldn't say their grades, to improve their learning. And, you know, when you're dealing with something like writing, that's a necessary part of the process, because writing is never really finished, right? You're constantly trying to improve the thing. So to slap an A on something that you know, well, this could be better if you did this, that just doesn't seem right to begin with. But to talk about what learning a student gained from going through a writing process, that's far more of what I'm about. So I think that answers your question.
Yeah. So our next question, what were some of your regrets that you've had, if any, about switching from grades to gradelessness?
So regrets are that I don't yet have a system that I can replicate from year to year. Like, because it is more labor intensive to provide feedback, I've been trying to, as you know, get students to provide more feedback. And I think I did a better job of that this year than last year, but I'm still seeing feedback from students that is perfunctory, that is just like, good job. And of course, that's not feedback, that's praise. And so we're still working to understand the difference between those two things. But so one of the regrets would be that, well, it's not really a regret, it's a recognition that a change this big takes time. I would say the biggest regret I have is this: I have not been able to convince anyone else in the English department to join me. Because anytime you're going to make a change like this, and it is a sea change, right? Like this alters the very nature of the classroom in a big way. You want to be able to have someone else to go through that with you. Because when it gets rough, and when it gets really, you're questioning yourself constantly and waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and wondering, what the heck am I doing? You want to be able to come in and talk to somebody who is also going through those issues or who has managed to solve something, right? So, you know, like, more heads on a problem, you're going to get that problem solved more quickly. So I haven't been able to convince anyone yet. Not for lack of trying, although I will say I haven't made very concerted efforts, because I want to sort of really understand this myself before I try and present it to somebody else.
Now, in the future, would you try going to like administration or the head of the English department and try and get them to, at least just for the English department, try and get them to switch from grades to gradelessness?
So probably what I would do is I would present my findings in either to the English department or, you know, so teachers in the summer, we often do something called professional development, day-long classes where we go in and we listen to somebody else tell us about a new program, or we encounter a new method for teaching or delivering information. And I have had a few teachers ask me if I would be willing to do professional development in the summer on gradelessness. So yeah, what I would do is I would try to gather an audience that way. I don't have time to do it this summer, but probably next year, at some point during the year, that is something I would do.
That's great.
So just to play devil's advocate, why do you think that other teachers aren't jumping on board, and like, what, like, how do you think that you can like persuade them? Because they must have a valid reason why they don't.
So, okay, so do they have a valid reason? So I would, this is not how you would persuade anyone, but I would tell you that in my head, this is what's going on. If you're a teacher, then you're trying to help students learn better. And there is no evidence that grades improve learning. So I would argue that anybody who stands in front of me and is still using grades has no valid reason other than, well, this is the way we've always done it, and this is how the grading program tallies things. So just as a flippant answer, I would say they have no valid reason. But how would I persuade them? I would talk at first about from a design standpoint, right? So like good design always proceeds by understanding the needs of the user. And the needs of our users, and our users are the students. You are the users of the systems. You are our customers, if you want to think in that kind of a business term. And the needs of a human being are to understand what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong in a deep way so that they can go back, practice, and perform better. Numbers don't do that. Numbers simply indicate on some scale that someone has created that is probably at least in large part rather arbitrary, that you fell in this area because some scorer was able to somehow, you know, measure your correct answers and your incorrect answers. Now, sure, in math, maybe it's a lot easier to understand what a correct answer is and an incorrect answer versus, say, if I'm writing something. But I think the, from the user's perspective in an English class, in a humanities class, that what we ought to be looking at is what do these learners need? And as I said, they need to understand in a deep way what they did well and why it worked and what they can still improve upon. And the way you get that is by constant iterative feedback, right? So like if we think about what really, when we as human beings, things that we do that we can measurably see we are improving on because somebody is giving us feedback. You think about things like gymnastics, where a child starts and can barely like do a somersault. But through feedback and through help, they're constantly improving and they're constantly getting better. Or you think about a child who learns how to play an instrument. So let's say it's a saxophone or some, which is what I used to play when I was a kid. You know, am I creating the embouchure correctly? Is my mouth correctly on the reed and the mouthpiece? Am I breathing correctly? All that feedback that I'm getting from somebody else is what's helping me improve. I'm not at the end of my lesson getting, here you go, you got an 80. That doesn't help me. So, you know, if I'm pushing back, I'm pushing back from a design standpoint, and I'm saying, what do my users need, and what is the best way to get that to my users?
So you say that like you're trying to help your users or students get what they need. Mm-hmm. What about for the past hundreds of years that grades have been used and people have been getting through, schools and colleges and going to jobs?
Sure.
What would you say to that about what they need?
Right. Well, there are systems that we have used, and we look at those systems and we say, well, this is working good enough. Let's just keep going with it, right? But when somebody says, well, you know, school worked for me. I came out and I got a good job. Okay. So I guess the first thing I would push back on would be like, well, how do you know that school worked for you, right? Like, how do you know that you're not succeeding in spite of school? Right? Like, if you have nothing else to compare it to because this is the system that you went through, then you really can't make an evaluation like that, right? So I would first push back at that level. And second way I would push back is from a business perspective, right? No business that wants to improve its profits is ever going to stay the same way it's always been. It's always going to look at the work that it's doing and at the way that its own systems are working, and it's going to ask two questions. Why is this system the way it is, and how can we make it better? You know very well that those questions are important to me because they're on the wall in my classroom. And if I look at the system of schooling and I say, why are we using grades, and there's no good reason for it, then I'm going to push back and I'm going to say, how can I make this better? So I guess you could say, well, what if you graded more? No, because I've already told you, grades don't improve learning. Right? There's no evidence out there that they improve learning. Do they get kids to do things? Yes. grades get a lot of kids to do things because there's a fear of punishment, there's a fear of failure. But nobody, like at the basic level of psychology, human beings are driven by five basic needs. They're driven by a need to belong. They're driven by a need for power over their circumstances, that that they can make choices, right? That they have freedom to move and do things in certain ways, that whatever it is they're doing brings them joy, or at least they find it fun. And finally, that within whatever circumstance they find themselves, their needs for survival are met. So those are the five basic needs. Grades don't feed any of those needs, okay? So if I'm looking at my system and say, how can I make my system better? I'm always going to base it upon, am I meeting the needs of my users? Those are the five basic needs, and I don't see how grades meet those needs.
So to go off what you said, I think that when teachers are grading kids, it's only to help them get through school. And I think that when you self-evaluate, it can teach kids responsibility and can hold kids accountable to get their work done. And this compares to like job evaluations in the work field.
That's a great comparison, right? Like one of the things when you first asked me, what was it I discovered about that first marking period that really shifted me? As I was sitting there listening to students saying, here's the work I've done, and here's why I believe it supports an A or a B or whatever it is, I realized that because I worked in business before I worked in school, I realized that what they were doing was essentially a job evaluation. They were sitting there and they were saying, within this class, I'm asked to do certain work because it's good for me, because I'm learning from it. And look at the level of work I've produced in this class. You know, at first I was here, but then I got the feedback and I worked on it and I improved it, and now I'm here and I'm regularly doing work at this level. So I have never experienced the kind of, except in debate, which I coached for 25 years, where the feedback is always immediate because you either win or you lose and you get reasons why you win or you lose. But I've never experienced student writing and student argumentation in my classroom that is more genuine than when I'm listening to a student talking about his or her grades and where they feel that they should be moved. And, you know, some people might say, well, isn't it easy for the student to sort of just like pull the wool over your eyes and make you think that, you know, they should get an A when really they should get a B or a C? To which case I would say, sure, a student could do that, I suppose. And I do push back against those students, and there are levels of evidence that students have to present. But in the end, that's also a learning moment for the child, for the student, because that's about integrity, right? Asking for an A when you very well know that you haven't met the descriptive criteria for an A, that's, you're perpetuating a lie. So that's an issue of integrity that I think I push back onto the student. So I'm still learning, I'm still trying to get better at this, but you're absolutely right when you think about this is very much like job evaluations.
So you talked a lot about earlier about how you wanted to meet the students' needs and what the students get out of it. What do you get out of it as a teacher?
So I get a lot of work. I get to talk to students a lot more. And that's really important. Like, and I'm still working this out, right? What I know about teaching is that the most important thing that promotes learning in the classroom is whether or not that learner, that child, feels that they have a good relationship with the teacher. And if they don't, they won't achieve at the highest level possible. So how do we build relationships? We talk to people. We talk at really deep and heartfelt levels about what's going on in the classroom. And certainly one of the main things that ought to be going on in the classroom is learning. And so what I get out of it is the ability to talk at really deep levels with students about who they are, how they see themselves, and where they want to be going forwards. And again, I think it's still a work in process for me, but it is the most significant change I've ever made as a teacher. And it's that important to me, so.
That's great, yeah.
Okay, so to close it out, I just wanted to talk about something that you said. So I basically formed the idea that it seems as though teachers, even with all the evidence that grades are not good for students and that a gradeless classroom could be beneficial, it seems like teachers aren't willing to put in the work to better a student. Maybe they aren't necessarily aware and they don't know about how all the benefits, but if a teacher is aware that grades are hurting a student mentally, then it doesn't make sense that they would still force that upon them.
You're right. It doesn't make sense. So there's that, there is a moral issue there, right? But I think you're also right to recognize that most teachers don't realize it. And there are a couple reasons they don't realize it. Number one, because the thing about education is that most of the time the people who become teachers were students who were probably good at the system to begin with. And since it worked for them, the presupposition that they come in with is that grades are going to work for their students as well. I don't think there's enough people in teacher colleges who are talking about this kind of constant formative assessment, which is really what this is. It's a constant loop of formative assessment. And I also think that at a certain level, we don't question, so I already said that, we don't question it because that's the way it's always been done. I don't want to push back on teachers and say that, you know, that they know enough to know that grades aren't good for students. But there is evidence out there that physically and mentally grades harm students, especially high school students, because that drive for the highest GPA or that drive for the best result you can get on a certain test because that's going to get you into whatever college is physically and mentally harmful to students. And that's not just me speaking. Harvard is leading an initiative called the Courage to Care. And the Courage to Care is Harvard and a number of other colleges around the nation are looking at their admissions practices and realizing that they are harming students. So they're looking at different ways to admit students that aren't solely based on SAT scores, on grade point averages, and on the kind of things that are harming people mentally and physically. And then again, if you also think about this, right, you know that there was this scandal, some people out in California who paid a lot of money to have other people take tests for their children and to massage certain aspects of that child's high school transcript in order to get them into the college that they wanted to get into, right? At that level, you have another moral issue that is related to grades, and that moral issue is an issue of equity, right? Everyone ought to have the same opportunity to achieve and get into a college in this country as everyone else. We know that's not true because we have massive inequities in terms of like where people live and why they live there and how they're kept there. That's somewhat of like that's a political issue I'm not going to touch, but there's also an issue of equity in terms of who has the money and who can pay to get into a school. And that should not be a measure of what school you go to.
So we have one last question that more goes out to your peers. Mm-hmm. So for the teachers that are attempting to switch from grades to a gradeless classroom, what would be the biggest thing that you would want them to know in terms of how difficult it is or how much it can actually help their style of teaching?
So the first thing I would say is make sure that you understand philosophically where you are coming to this position. And do a little bit of research so that you have a backing on that. I'm going to recommend a shout out to all my friends at teachersgoinggradeless.com and also Teachers Throwing Out Grades, which is another group founded by a guy named Mark Barnes. So I would suggest going there and doing some reading there. I would also suggest reaching out to as many teachers who are gradeless as you can and start asking them about the systems that they have put in place to assure that this is more than just like an open free-for-all. So one of the things that I talk to my students about this year, my ninth grade students, is when I introduce gradelessness and they're like, well, you know, I need grades. Grades, you know, grades are the way that I understand where I am. And I picked up my packet, which delineated all the research and talked about how things were going to work in the class. And I said to that student, I'm like, this here is the biggest system I have ever had to justify grades or how grades would be used in my classroom. I never had a system like that. And I also urge those teachers to consider this, that if their experience in teacher preparation program was like mine, they never had a class in how to grade. Like the dirty secret, one of the dirty secrets of teacher education is this. There is no class that you take called Grading 101. Nobody ever teaches you how to do it. Nobody ever teaches you about how the numbers work out or how the numbers actually reflect what that human being is capable of. It's just because we've always done it that way. So I would urge them to consider, you know, that there's nothing really to stand on. So do some research, understand why not having grades is better than having them. Two, make sure that you reach out to other people and you get a system in place where the students are still responsible and coming to you, and you're able to go through lots of conferences with that student. So whether you're using something like Flipgrid, where the student can, you know, talk to you in a minute and a half and you can reply to that student really quickly, or whether you're using longer online conferences like YouTube videos that students create, or whether they're documents or websites or something like that, make sure you have some way for that student to talk to you once or twice a marking period and say, here's where I am and here's why I think this is where my growth puts me. And there's a whole lot of other things, but those are the things that I would say.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in today, Mr. Wright.
And thank you both for having me.